Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So today we're celebrating the appearance of Lord Vamanadeva, dwarf Brahmana incarnation of Krishna. Lord Vamanadeva is also known as Trivikram. He took three steps. That's all he asked from Bali Maharaj. So, as always, things in the Srimad Bhagavatam start off with a question by Pritchett Maharaj. As we've been discussing, the Srimad Bhagavatam is a series of nested dialogues, one dialogue within another. So questions always launch things. Most of them are questions by Pritchett Maharaj. And sometimes within that dialogue, there are nested questions by Yudhisthira or Vidura or Uddhava. So, Pritchett Maharaj will start things off by asking about Krishna's incarnation as a dwarf Brahmana. Sri Raja Vacha, Bale Pada Trayang Bhume Kasma Dadir Ayachato Bhutveshvara Kripa Naval Labdar Topi Babanjatam Etat Veditamichchamo Mahat Kautu Alanghina Yachneshvarasya Purnasya Bandhanam Chapyanagasa. Maharaj Pritchett inquired. Of course, we can think about that for a few moments, as I was explaining to someone a few days ago. We should study the inquiries of Maharaj Pritchett, then we'll learn how to ask a proper question. The problem in this world is not simply that people don't have the answers. They also don't know how to ask a proper question. That means they don't know what to focus on, because their minds are deranged by passion and ignorance. They can't actually pick out what they should inquire about, and therefore there's no hope of getting the answers or recognizing the right answers. They don't know what's important. That is the basic problem. Prahlad Maharaja said, Natei Vidu Svartikatim Vivishnu. They don't know what the ultimate goal of life is. So if you don't know what the ultimate goal of life is, then what are you looking for? What are you asking questions about? So by studying the inquiries of Maharaj Pritchett, we will understand what is important. And it's kind of funny. Sometimes you look at the questions Pritchett Maharaj asked in Srimad Bhagavatam and you wonder, well, what's he doing that? What's the big deal? Why is he asking about that? Then we have to rearrange our own intellectual priorities. Like, well, isn't this just a small point Pritchett Maharaj is asking about? Or, I've got some other things I think are more important. We may have important questions, but we should devote proper time to understanding the angles that have been chalked out by the Mahajans, the great souls of Pritchett Maharaj. Of course, it is the duty of the disciple to ask questions. At the same time, it's also the duty to learn how to ask a good question. Maharaj Pritchett inquired, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the proprietor of everything. Why did he beg 3 paces of land from Bali Maharaj like a poor man? And when he got the gift for which he had begged, why did he nonetheless arrest Bali Maharaj? I am very much anxious to know the mystery of these contradictions." You see, Pritchett Maharaj is stirring up the excitement for you. "I'm very much anxious to know the mystery of these contradictions. Why are people so attached to mundane literature? They think there's some juice there. They're attracted to mundane things because they think that material experiences, especially material relationships, present so many intriguing, fascinating aspects. That's why it's essential that people fix their minds in Srimad Bhagavatam so that they can begin to relish all the various waves and currents in Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's Prajit Maharaj. I'm very much anxious to know the mystery of these contradictions. I mean, these are not just light things that Prajit Maharaj is talking about. On the one hand, he's got the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the proprietor of everything, Bhutva Ishvara, the proprietor of all the universe. On the other hand, he says, this Supreme Personality of Godhead is acting like a poor person, begging. And besides him acting like a poor man and begging, even though he owns everything, when he gets what he wants, when Bali Maharaj gives him the gift that Vamadeva had begged for, what happened then? Vamadeva arrested him. So it's very contradictory. One who owns everything is begging, and then the person gives him in charity what he begs for, and the person who receives the gift arrests the person. What's going on here? So, in answering these issues raised by Prajit Maharaj, you'll learn quite a bit about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You'll also learn quite a bit about bhakti. So, what are the things we should know about Vamadeva? First of all, you may remember in the first canto of Bhagavatam that we are instructed how the Lord incarnates in different ways. Deva Tiryan Narajashu. He incarnates amongst the demigods, he incarnates amongst the lower species, and he incarnates amongst the human beings. You cannot count all the incarnations of the Lord, just like you cannot count the waves in the ocean. Every species of life has an incarnation of the Lord, teaching according to the capacity of the entities, their particular problems, the language they speak. So, of course, it's not that you're going to be able to find out the incarnation of the Lord in every species, but at least you can be aware of those listed in Srimad Bhagavatam, and the human being is instructed to not accept any incarnations unless they're listed in Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, any incarnation that you might stumble across, past, present, or future, is listed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Doesn't mean that's all there are, but it means that's all you can encounter, so don't accept anything else. So Vamanadeva is an example of the Lord incarnating amongst the demigods, the devas, in the higher planets. Higher planet doesn't necessarily mean up here physically. It means higher in terms of living conditions. And the Lord, he appears amongst lower species as Varaha, the boar incarnation, Hayagriva, the horse incarnation, Matsya, the fish incarnation, Kurma, the tortoise incarnation. And Niradishu, the Lord appears amongst human beings as Krishna, Balaram, Ramchandra. Of course, no matter what species of life the Lord appears in, his body is transcendental. He does not lose his position as the cause of all causes. And in every appearance, the Lord does so many inconceivable things so that anyone who cares to know can understand this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Today we'll focus on the beginning of this pastime with Bali Maharaj. One thing you can bear in mind about Lord Vamanadeva, the dwarf Brahman incarnation, is that he's going to demonstrate that Krishna enjoys everything, and everything means everything. Therefore, Vamadeva's specialty is cheating. He's Krishna coming to sport by cheating. So how did this begin? It's an interplanetary affair. Srimad Bhagavatam, we just have to face it, is an interplanetary book. It does not consider the Earth as the center of the universe. It does not consider human beings as the most intelligent creatures. So, Bali Maharaj, he's the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. That dynasty is demoniac, yet it has some greatest devotees there. Two Mahajans, two of the 12 Mahajans, the great authorities on bhakti, they're from demoniac dynasty. Krishna can do whatever he wants. So, he's the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. And he's the leader of the demons. Bali Maharaj's father is Maharaj Virochan. That's the son of Prahlad Maharaj. So they're all coming in the line of Aranyakashipu. Yet, you have two of the 12 authorities on devotional service are coming in the line of Aranyakashipu. Actually, both the demigods and the demons, they trace back to Kashyapa Muni. He's a Prajapati, or a procreator of the universe. And from him come both demigods, asuras, and demons, asuras. How did that happen? From one wife of Kashyapa Muni, Aditi, come the demigods. But his other wife, one of his other wives, Diti. She could not control her senses. And from her, the demons came. She forced or overpowered her husband to engage in sex life not according to the regular principles. And from that union came the demons. Kashyapa Muni could not resist, and she nagged him so much. So, both the family line of the demons and devas trace back to the same person. Naturally, you'll think how it is that one Prajapati or universal procreator could be that powerful. But we just have to accept that their entity is much more powerful than us. And the job of the Prajapatis on behalf of Brahma is to populate the universe with all species. Somehow or other, they can do that. Daksha, he's also Prajapati. So, Bali Maharaj, he became extraordinarily powerful. So powerful that he could attack Indrapuri, the capital city of Indra, the heavenly planets. How did he get so powerful that he could make this interplanetary challenge and conquest? By worshiping the Brahmanas. One thing you're going to note in this beginning of Vamana Leela is how Vedic sacrifice is intrinsically woven with everything. Bali Maharaj became powerful by dedication to Sukracharya, his guru of fruit of activity, his Karmakandya guru. Sukracharya is coming in the line of Bhrigu Muni. So, even though he's not a transcendentalist, Sukracharya, he's not into Krishna bhakti, still, he's a very powerful, extraordinary brahmana in terms of mystic powers and elevations of the heavenly planets and all sorts of extraordinary material productions, which demonstrate the potency of good karma, fruit of activity. We don't know what the full material effect is of Vedic sacrifices. People today, they think that you worship God for a nice car or a nice home or something like that, or so you can go overseas. But first-class materialists are Vedic. The things they get out of rituals and sacrifices are you couldn't conceive of. So Bali Maharaj has done like that. Under the guidance of Shukracharya and the Brahmanas, he's getting enormous benefits, Vedic fruitive or karmic benefits. He's very dedicated to the Brahmins. Brahmin doesn't necessarily mean bhakta, Krishna conscious person. Brahmana can simply mean someone in the mode of goodness, devoted to austerity, Vedic knowledge, cleanliness, honesty, like that. Austerity. But not necessarily transcendentalist. Brahmana can mean someone solidly fixed in the mode of goodness, who's studying metaphysical knowledge like that. But devotee of Krishna is something else. Vaishnav is more than a Brahmana. So, Bali Maharaj, he became very powerful. And the Brahmins made a sacrifice, a ritual for him. And out of the sacrificial fire, there came a celestial chariot covered with gold and silk. There also appeared yellow horses like those of Indra and a flag marked with a lion. This is not mythology. This is just the power of Brahmanas, which you don't see in the age of Kali. Simply by yajna, they engaged Bali Maharaj in the Vishvajit yajna because he desired to conquer the heavenly planets. So they prepared him for the yajna, the ritual, bathing him properly. And when the Vedic rituals are performed correctly, these extraordinary things can happen. You don't read in the Srimad Bhagavatam about the Vedic people having industries and research labs and factories. No, the power, the might of Vedic culture is yajna or Vedic ritual, which means sacrifices performed so perfectly and the mantras recited so perfectly that so many material things can be generated. So out of the sacrificial fire came a chariot with horses and also bows and arrows and armor for Bali Maharaj. This is all simply due to mantra technology. Actually, the whole material world begins by sound. So what's the big deal? With the Brahmanas being able to produce all these things for Bali Maharaj. Real human civilization is based on yajna, sacrifice. Of course, sacrifice should be for Vishnu, yajna by Vishnu. And then all the demigods are satisfied. But in this case, Bali Maharaj had a particular purpose. He's doing as much as he knows. He's a demon. At least he's following the Vedic rituals, but he's not interested in... He's from the demoniac dynasty, let's say. We don't call him a demon. He's in the demoniac line, yet he's acting very pious because he's the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. But he's not yet consciously acknowledging Vishnu. He just wants a kingdom better than anything around. He's going to conquer the heavenly planets and take all his demons there. He's going to take all his demoniac followers with him. Rather than their performing good karma to get to the heavenly planets, he's just going to conquer it. So, out of the sacrificial fire comes this chariot, armor, bows, arrow. You shouldn't think that the Vedic chariots and bows and arrows are like, you know, what's that guy's name? Attila the Hun would use or something. These are high tech, far beyond what we could conceive of. Such chariots and horses could go to other planets. And the bows and arrows were not just like, you know, the American Indians used or something. These bows and arrows were charged by sound and they could do extraordinary things. Start hurricanes, or counteract hurricanes, cause the opposing warrior to fall asleep, produce mystic illusions. So when you're talking about Vedic chariots and bows and arrows, you're just not in the same category as the bows and arrows and chariots that people are familiar with. So, Bali Maharaji got the results of this sacrifice, and after offering obeisances to the Brahmins, to his grandfather Prahlad Maharaj, who was there, he took off for the capital city of Indra. Indra is the chief demigod of the heavenly planets. Not of the universe, that is Brahma, but of the heavenly planets. So you get a very extraordinary description of Indraloka, or Indrapuri, the city of Indra, in this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's heaven, but it's not the spiritual world. Because it's not the spiritual world. Therefore, even in the heavenly planets, there's anxiety. The demons are about to attack. The descriptions are quite wonderful. Anyone who doesn't know about the spiritual world would think, oh, this is heaven, this is the ultimate. You can read, just to affiliate you. King Indra's city was full of pleasing orchards and gardens, such as the Nandana gardens. Because of the weight of the flowers, leaves, and fruit, the branches of the eternally existing trees were bending down. The gardens were visited by pairs of chirping birds and singing bees. The entire atmosphere was celestial. Of course, I know there's a Josh question right here. Eternally existing trees? It's not the spiritual world. How could the trees be eternally existing? You're thinking that, right? Yeah. You would have. No, that is not the answer. The answer is the time span is so long it seems like it's eternal. Life in the heavenly planets. Everything seems deathless, but it's not. Beautiful women, protected by the demigods, sported in the gardens, which had lotus ponds full of swans, cranes, chakravakas, and ducks. The city was surrounded by trenches full of Ganges water, known as Akasha Ganga. The doors were made of solid gold plates, and the gates were of excellent marble. The entire city had been constructed by Vishvakarma, the construction engineer of the heavenly planets. The city was full of courtyards, wide roads, assembly houses, and not less than 100 million airplanes. Airplanes? The crossroads were made of pearl, and there were sitting places made of diamond and coral. Everlastingly beautiful and youthful women who were dressed with clean garments glittered in the city like fires with flames. They all possessed the quality of Shyama. All the things that a materialist would want, they're there in perfection in the heavenly planets. But you cannot get to the heavenly planets if you have any anger, lust, or greed. Therefore, even if you want to be a materialist, you have to perform good karma so you go to the heavenly planets. Then you can, if you want to chase the Shyama women, you can do that there. What's the characteristics of the Shyama women? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a hint of the quality of the Shyama woman. A woman whose body is very warm during the winter and cool during the summer, and who generally has very firm breasts, is called Shyama. So when you hear these descriptions, you should think, what am I doing chasing around the ghostly bodies of the material world? You don't even know how to be a good materialist. You want to be a good materialist, you got to go to the heavenly planet. The breezes blowing in the streets of the city bore the fragrance of the flowers falling from the hair of the women of the demigods. Do you get that walking around Wellington? The breezes blowing in the streets of Wellington bore the fragrance of the flowers falling from the hair of the women. Apsaras, those are Heavenly Planet's society girls, passed on the streets, which were covered with the white, fragrant smoke of a voodoo incense emanating from windows with golden filigree. The city was shaded by canopies decorated with pearls, and the domes of the palaces had flags of pearl and gold. The city always resounded with the vibrations of peacocks, pigeons, and bees. And above the city flew airplanes full of beautiful women who constantly chanted auspicious songs that were very pleasing to the ear. So in the airplanes above the city were choirs of women in airplanes singing very pleasing sounds. All these things you can see people try for on earth. They like to hear choirs. They like to hear singing. They like to ride about in airplanes. They like to chase women. They like to accumulate jewels and gold. But you can see that there's no competition in terms of material pleasure between Earth and the heavenly planet. The city was filled with the sounds of mridangas, consells, kettle drums, flutes, and well-tuned stringed instruments, all playing in concert. There was constant dancing, and the Gandharvas sang. The Gandharvas are a particular race in the universe that are expert at singing and dancing. The combined beauty of Indrapuri defeated beauty personified. No one who was sinful, envious, violent toward other living entities, cunning, falsely proud, lusty, or greedy could enter that city. The people who lived there were all devoid of these faults. So Boi Maharaj is now attacking with his troops. And the demigods, being possessed of superior intelligence, they can detect. Why is he so powerful? Normally the demons can never threaten us so much. But why is Boi Maharaj mounting such a massive attack? They could tell even before he attacked that he was possessed of extraordinary power. So they went and they asked Brihaspati, he's the spiritual master of the heavenly planets. So they asked him, what's going on? Why are these demoniac hordes so abnormally powerful? So Brihaspati explained, they've been carefully worshipping the Brahmanas and performing Vedic rituals, so now they're possessed of immense potency. They're so powerful now that you can't do anything about it. Only the Supreme Personality of Godhead can deal with this. So I advise you just abandon Indrapuri. Make yourself scarce. So we've been discussing how in Krishna Lila, the demons, they can change into whatever shape they like. Similarly, demigods also can do that. Kama Rupina means the ability to assume whatever form they like. So the demigods just changed into forms that could not be perceived by the demons. They became invisible to the demoniac eyes. And they vacated the heavenly planet city of Indrapuri because Brihaspati had told them, you can't defeat the demons right now. It's just not the time. They're so powerful by performing Vedic rituals and worshipping the Brahmanas. You can't do anything about it right now. Only the Supreme Personality of Godhead can fix this. So all the devas, they left. And Boi Maharaj occupied the throne of Indra. And just to make sure he would stay there, the Brahmanas, advising him, had him perform 100 Ashvamedha yajnas. Huge, costly rituals. You can't imagine the resources required. Horse sacrifices. So the Brahman is advising Boi Maharaj, they knew. In order for him to stay on the throne of Indra, he's going to need good karma. He's going to need good karma potency. So we're going to have him perform yajnas, and that way he'll get the necessary staying power on the throne of Indra, because that's how Indra got his post by performing 100 Ashvamedha yajnas. We'll have Boi Maharaj do the same thing. These are not just casual rituals. They require such resources. They require such expertise. So, Bali Maharaj occupied the throne of Indra. Meanwhile, someone is lamenting. Who is that? Aditi, the mother of the demigods. She's lamenting because she misses her sons. So her husband, Kashyapa Muni, has been off in meditation, samadhi, for many years. Because the lifespans are so long, he could just be away from home for, you know, many years in samadhi. So he came back to his home and he sees what's going on. My home, my ashram, my grihastha ashram is not looking beautiful. My wife is lamenting. There's just sadness everywhere. What's happening? So what's the first thing he asks her? Oh, why are you blue? No. He asks her, what's happening here? Are the regular principles being followed? Why is there such moroseness, such lamentation? Are you following the scriptural injunctions? That is real civilization. You just say, what's happening? Have you gone to a counselor or you've gone to a therapist? The first question was, are the regular principles being followed? So, then he asked her 7 questions. Very nice to study. Things like, are you taking care of guests who come? Are you following the process for proper Vedic household life? What's happening? Why are you so lamenting? Are you performing sacrifices for the Brahmins? Are you performing fire yajnas? The whole point of properly following the principles of Vedic household life is that one becomes Krishna conscious. Not that the principles, the Vedic principles, are simply meant so that you will enjoy sense gratification at home. No, that's not the point. But when I was in Christchurch, some young householders and aspiring householders, they came to me and they all were asking this, must have consulted one another, asking me the same question. If you follow all the principles of the Grihastha Ashram perfectly, will it be happy then? Will it be a success? Meaning, will you have a happy home life if you follow all the instructions of the ashram perfectly? So I thought about it, I said, well, if you follow all the instructions of the Grihastha Ashram perfectly, you'll be Krishna conscious. But as for whether you have happiness at home, who can say? I said, come on, you know, the purpose of the ashram is to go back to Godhead. If you're following the instructions of the ashram perfectly, you go back to Godhead. Whether you have happiness in this world, who can say? Really? I said, well, come on, what about Srila Prabhupada? How is his home life? Oh, yeah. Oh. So the point of following the Vedic ashram system is not to get material happiness. The point is to become Krishna conscious. The point is that you can go back to Godhead and you're able to influence others to go back to Godhead. Whether or not there's happy material life, who can say? It's like the marriage advice we give to everyone. Be as happy as you can in a world where there's no happiness. Because if you tell married persons, don't be happy, they just, what am I supposed to do yet? You know, our whole arrangement is meant that we, you know, feel better and, you know, there's some enjoyment. So if you just tell them, well, you know, there's no happiness in the material world, they just kind of, what are we supposed to do, just give up, you know? So therefore you tell them, be as happy as you can in a world where there's no happiness. So the perfect execution of the ashram, any ashram, is to develop love of God, not material happiness. Anyway, even if you have material desires, still worship Krishna. That's what Shukadeva Goswami advises in the second canto. Akamo sarvakama va, moksha kamo dadadi, tivrena bhakti yogena. Whether you're full of material desires, free from material desires, or your desires of liberation from material existence, just perform devotional service. These persons who are asking me, devotees are asking me, they remind me of like Dhruva Maharaj. How do I get a kingdom better than anyone else ever had? Who do I worship? Demanding narrowly, just tell me, who do I worship? Where do I go? What do I do? I gotta get a better kingdom. So Narada Muni engaged him in the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And finally, when Dhruva Maharaj attained the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he said, what was I doing wanting all these other things? I was crazy. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Chatura Pitapa Jantema, Janasu Kutino Arjuna, Ato Jagasura Tarti. Four kinds of persons with material desires, they come to me. They're all pious, because they're approaching me. But they do have ulterior motives. They're distressed, just like Aditi, she's distressed. Or they're curious, they want wealth, they want knowledge. In any case, they're glorious because they've approached Krishna. So, Kashyap is asking Aditi, now, did you feed the guests? Did you offer fire to the sacrifices? Did you take care of the Brahmins? What's going on? And then she tells him, my sons, they're no longer around. They've all vacated Indrapuri and I miss them so much, I'm lamenting. Kashyapa Muni hears that. Of course, she didn't just say it like that. She couched it all in Vedic philosophy. So Kashyapa heard that and said, just see the power of the illusory energy. Simply because of affection for children. all this lamentation is there. Then he explained to her, you know, we're not the body. The spirit soul is completely different from the material elements. Of course, she didn't really want to hear that. She just wanted her sons. So Kashyapa Muni, he understood. Yeah, she requires a solution of her material desires in a way that, so he's going to devise it in a way that she can also be Krishna conscious. In their conversing with one another, sometimes he's calling her, oh my attached queen of the home, and sometimes she's calling, oh my beloved husband who's so attached to his home. Everything's very eloquent in the Vedic language. So, you may say, why was she lamenting? You know, she had demigod children. Why she shouldn't have had all material happiness? No, that's like Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam. Actually, whether licit or illicit sex, the results are troublesome because you have to take responsibility. there's attachment involved, raising children. So either way, it's troublesome. And Aditi is experiencing that. Kashyapa, he knows that, but what can he do? It's his job to take care of his wife. So he says, all right, I'm going to teach you a system by which you can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She's presenting her inquiries to Kashyapa. Oh, my husband, do something. And he's going to say, why approach me? You should approach Krishna. And that way he's functioning properly. He's actually carrying out his job as a husband properly. He's saying, fair enough that you're asking me, but it's my duty to tell you, you must become Krishna conscious. Or you must approach the Lord, Supreme Lord, for these things. So he gives her a process called the Pyovrata, in which you only drink milk for 12 days, and you perform various worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He gives her the Dwadashakshara mantra, the mantra of 12 syllables, which is Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is the same mantra that Narada Muni gave Dhruva Maharaj. So, based on that worship, Aditi was able to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as her son, Brahmanadeva, dwarf Brahmana, who appeared to relieve the distress of Aditi and the demigods and to finish off Bali Maharaj's material desires and give him pure devotion. And of course, whatever Krishna does, he enjoys. So he's going to enjoy cheating. So, upon the birth of Brahmanadeva, the dwarf Brahmana boy, he walked to the sacrificial site of Bali Maharaj. He's always performing Vedic rituals with his Brahmins. And Brahmanadeva, the little Brahmana boy, is looking so effulgent that to Bali Maharaj and his Brahmins, it looks like the sun is rising nearby. So Bali Maharaj immediately, because he's a great devotee of Brahmanas, he says, "My dear Brahmana boy, you're looking so wonderful. What can I do for you? Everyone knows I always give to the Brahmanas. You can have whatever you want from me. Elephants, villages, girls to marry, anything, just ask, you can have it." And of course we know that Brahmanadeva said, "Oh, you just give me 3 steps of land." "You're very glorious. You've never refused to give charity. This is true of your whole family line. Your ancestors are so great." Brahmanadeva is really making a big drama for cheating. He even starts glorifying Hiranyakashipu. "You know, your great grandfather Hiranyakashipu, he was so great even Vishnu was afraid of him." Vishnu ran away from him and hid. "This is how great your family is." "Never was there a Kshatriya born in your family who refused to give charity. So it's very good that you're offering me whatever I want. But, you know, I just want 3 steps of land, that's all, according to my own measure." So what does Bali Maharaj say? "Oh, how inexpert you are. You're just an inexperienced boy. You don't know how to ask for charity. Once again, I'm telling you, whatever you want, girls, villages, elephants, you name it, you can have it." So then Brahmanadeva begins to lecture him that if someone's not satisfied with 3 steps of land, they won't be satisfied even if they possess the whole universe. Hint. And he speaks to him about greed and how a Brahmana has to be self-satisfied and how greed causes so much problems. So Bali Maharaj says, all right, if that's where you're at, you want your 3 steps of land, what's the big deal? Take your 3 steps, no problem." So this is Krishna cheating. Shukracharya, Bali Maharaj's priest, he picked up on it. "Wait a minute, Bali. This is not an ordinary Brahmana boy. This is Vishnu coming to cheat you. Don't give him anything." So of course, Bali Maharaj is astonished. "Well, all my life I've been taught that I should worship Vishnu. That's where you get all the good material benefits from. And now you're telling me don't give Vishnu what he wants? How can that be religion?" So then Shukracharya, being an expert in good karmic rituals, he flipped through his Vedic encyclopedia in his mind and, don't you know that according to the Vedas, if you make a promise to give someone something or a promise about anything and you don't proceed it with Om, then you don't have to carry it out. And besides, also, it's not a Vedic principle It's against Vedic principles to give charity in such a way that you become poor, because you get, then you can't perform any more Vedic principles. What Shukracharya really meant was that if you give everything to Vishnu, then you won't have any more, you know, donations to give to me. So better not do it, because I, you know, I'm living off your donations. And this way, Shukracharya, he's not a real guru, he's like a priest. He's concerned with his own maintenance, so he's changing his tune according to the situation. The Vedic injunctions say that one should never give charity in such a way that it endangers one's livelihood. Because in order to perform the Vedic rituals, you need money. If you give all your money away, you can't perform Vedic rituals. Therefore, the spiritual thing to do is not to give it, even though you promised. So Balimaraj's thinking about all this very deeply. And explained that so rare it is an opportunity to give charity, to give everything. If what you say is true, Shukracharya, that I might lose the whole universe, because Balimaraj controls the whole universe from Indrapuri. If that's true, why should I deny this opportunity? Why should I miss it? Kshatriyas, they would give many births of living just for an opportunity to give everything, and in that way achieve eternal fame. So this is my golden moment. You see, Balimaraj, he's not yet manifesting his knowledge of pure devotion. He's just like manifesting attachment to performing Vedic rituals for fruit of activity, for material gain. So he's saying, well, okay, if I own the whole universe, if I lose it, man, what will I get in return? Eternal fame! And Kshatriyas love eternal fame. Name and fame, that's what Vedic warriors thrive on. So, hey, no problem. I'll give to Vishnu. So he, in this way, disobeyed Shukracharya. And he allowed Vamadeva to take his steps. But what happened to Vamadeva's steps? With two steps, he had covered the whole universe. Where was he going to put his third step? Balimaraj, watching all this, said, well, because Vamadeva said, you cheated me. You said three steps, and I don't have anywhere to put my third step. He's accusing Balimaraj of cheating, when actually it's Krishna who's cheating. So Balimaraj humbly thinks, well, the possessor of the wealth is more valuable than the wealth. So, my dear Lord, you please put your third step on my head. So, Vamadeva did that. Balimaraj still has some kind of conception that he's the proprietor. So he thinks, since I'm the proprietor of the wealth, I'm more important than the wealth. So Vamadeva, the Lord, puts his third step on Balimaraj's head. But then he orders that Balimaraj be arrested, because he still didn't accept that Balimaraj had kept his promise. So he arrested Balimaraj. Very excruciating situation for a Kshatriya, a Vedic warrior, to lose the whole universe in a few seconds. You can't imagine how much attachment that is if you run the whole universe, you control the whole universe, and to lose it in a few seconds. And then you're bound up. He's bound by the ropes of Varuna, very painful condition. And while he's bound up like that, you know, he's topmost Vedic warrior, so powerful he can conquer the universe. While he's bound up like that, even his wife Vindhyavali comes and gets on his case. Just look at you! You thought you ran the whole universe. Now look at you! I mean, this is worse than death for a Kshatriya. So, this is Bhagavatam has everything in it, all these various emotional dynamics. And so as we all know, after Krishna satisfies himself by taking everything from Balimaraj and purifying him so that Balimaraj will understand that pure bhakti is the actual goal, Then the Lord gave Bali Maharaj his own planet and residence in which the Lord himself would be the doorman. So he took everything away in a most sudden, extraordinary way, and then he gave himself to Bali Maharaj. So at that point, Bali Maharaj could understand that pure devotion is the greatest wealth. This treatment for Bali Maharaj is special. Krishna says that when I see a devotee who's maintaining material desires, but at the same time possesses a very sincere desire for me, I resolve this schizophrenic situation in a certain way. I smash him so that his material desires are frustrated, and at the same time, I give him my lotus feet. But that's not ordinary, that's special. Generally, Krishna will allow you to work your material desires out, like Dhruva Maharaj. Took some time. But for those he specially favors, Krishna just knocks your material schemes apart and gives you his lotus feet. That's special mercy, though. So that's why people are afraid of Krishna. They're afraid to worship Krishna. They say, well, that's the way he treats his dear most. I don't know if I want to be dear to Krishna. So they worship the demigods. They think, you know, you worship the devas, you get material benefits. You worship Krishna and you become so dear to him. What is he? How does he show his reciprocation? He smashes your material life. Of course, they don't understand the nectar of the lotus feet of the Lord. They just focus on their material life being smashed. But this is a special favor of the Lord, not for every devotee. So if you are able to convince Krishna, in spite of your material desires, that you just want pure devotion to his lotus feet, he may do that. Otherwise, generally, Krishna just lets a devotee with material desires go on in that way and gradually realize these things aren't needed. So if you want to cheat Krishna, Krishna is showing as Vamanadeva that he's the most expert cheater. He enjoys always dancing, fighting, romancing, and cheating too. Whatever it is, Krishna is the best at it. And Krishna enjoys without the slightest problem. Any questions?
Maharaj, this is the pastime where Bali Maharaj wanted to offer his obeisances to Vamanadeva, but he couldn't do it because his demonic advisors were there, so he offered his obeisances in his mind.
Bali Maharaj would only be surrounded by his demoniac advisors before he was sent to the lower planets, where Krishna became his doorman. This is the pastime of Bali Maharaj and Vamanadeva.
I'm just not sure whether it was Bali Maharaj or
Vamanadeva. That's on my butt.
It was someone was being with the demonic advisors.
What are you talking about specifically?
I'm talking about an occasion where a person was standing there and his demonic advisors were surrounding him.
So where did you read that?
I heard it. I was just wondering if this was actually it.
I don't know what you're talking about. You have to tell me where you are, what you are, where you are speaking, what you are speaking of. Any other questions?
Yeah, sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
If
Brahman
is done always
Vaishnava,
they really get the potency to get results
from Vedic rituals have that potency. Know the goodness. Brahmana Tejas, the power of a Brahmana. There's potency in this material world that you're not aware of. That's what we were talking about. That's the whole point. There's so much potency in this material world, so much Tejas that you're not aware of. And it's not even the spiritual world. Just like Indrapuri, you read the descriptions. It's not the spiritual world. Oh, you stop doing the service and you just stay in the ashram and moan and cry. Oh, I'm so low. Oh. Devotional service itself is purifying. We become more sincere about the processes of devotional service. We try to analyze, who am I trying to please? Whose senses am I trying to please? And of course, expert guidance is required. Just like Kashyapa gave Aditi expert guidance. He saw, well, look, I'm telling her she's not the body. She's not really going to handle that. So I'll make use of her affection for her sons to get her to do the Payo Vrata, this special worship of the Supreme Lord. That way I'll deal with both things. I'll dovetail her desires to see her sons in such a way that she becomes purified. So expert guidance is required too. So in that way, he is functioning as her spiritual master. He told her, I'm going to tell you what Lord Brahma told me. And I'll engage you in that way. This is parampara.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.